Now streaming on SBS On Demand. The Hospital in the Deep End. Our hospitals are under pressure like never before.
Oh my God.
And when the system buckles, we all pay the price.
That's not good.
In this landmark series, three notable Australians step onto the front line to see what it really takes to save a life.
I honestly didn't think it was like that.
The Hospital in the Deep End. Stream now on SBS On Demand.
Sam, welcome to Full Story.
Thanks for having me.
You've been following this story closely. There's been some big developments overnight, and Australia has granted humanitarian visas to several Iranian women's soccer players. What have we learned about what's been happening behind the scenes over recent days?
Yeah, it's been a pretty extraordinary 24 hours, even 12 hours as we record this podcast. We know that five Iranian women's national team players have been granted visas. And in press conferences this morning, the Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese, and the Home Affairs Minister, Tony Burke, indicated that this was something that had been afoot for some time, that there were plans that were happening behind the scenes.
There has been a lot of work that's been going on in recent days to make sure that we had the maximum number of opportunities for these women to know that they could seek assistance if they wanted to, and to have maximum number of opportunities.
As early, potentially, as when the team arrived in Australia. But we do know, as has been reported, that contact was made with the players by Australian officials, I think it was yesterday morning, after their final group game of the Women's Asian Cup against the Philippines, which indicated that the team was bound to depart, as is quite normal for a tournament like this one.
This is my second night here in Brisbane. I was here the night before as well. And at that point, we had conversations happening with some of the women, but we didn't know whether any would seek assistance.
Usually after a team is knocked out, they tend to leave the host country within a couple of days. And so there was an urgent timeline for action, I think, once that game was over.
I signed off last night for their applications to go on to humanitarian visas. And a little bit after 1:30 a.m. this morning, the processing was completed by the Department of Home Affairs.
So, yeah, it's tremendous news as to the safety of those players, but I think it still begs the question of what's going to happen to the rest of the team. Mm-hmm. Five of them are safe, which is fantastic.
They were moved to a safe location by the Australian Federal Police, and last night I met with them at that location.
But there's another 20 to 25 players and potentially also some staff members who are still wrapped in the bubble of silence and control, the Iranian national team. And so, yeah, time is ticking as to whether or not those folks are going to be safe as well.
Sam, there's been some commentary saying that they've been surveilled and tightly monitored while here. We know that five of them left the hotel where they were staying with their teammates. What have we learned about how that was coordinated?
It's a mystery at this point. It could have come from lots of different channels. My understanding is that in the lobby of the hotel on the Gold Coast where the Iranian players were staying, there was a growing contingent of Iranian diaspora, allies, supporters, potential family members, longtime friends of the team who had essentially camped out in the hotel to keep an eye on the players and to make sure that they weren't effectively shuffled off in the night out of the sort of the eyes and the reach of any local authorities who could have helped them. So the details as to how these five players in particular escaped the hotel are still unknown, and that's potentially deliberate. I don't think it would be wise to share publicly how those players escaped the hotel, because there may be some remaining players who want to do the same thing. And so if it's known, particularly to the regime staff who are part of the Iranian national team delegation, that this was a particular method that they used, that could be something they could use to continue to control and restrict the remaining players. So, yeah, I have little doubt that there are more players in the team who would want to potentially stay in Australia, but it's incredibly difficult for them to make these kinds of decisions when reports suggest that they have been forced to sign contracts requiring them to return back to Iran. Otherwise, their families will be punished. And overnight, we saw a reiteration of those threats from some Iranian state media as well. So It's a really, really complex and difficult and stressful time, especially for some of these players who are young women, you know, 19, 20, 21 years old. This is the first time that some of them have ever left Iran. They don't speak English. They're not surrounded by people that they trust, and they have no contact with their families back home because of the war that the US and Israel have waged against Iran, causing an internet blackout. So it's a really stressful time for all of them, but it's really great to see that Australia has stepped in and that some of the players have reached out as well to seek asylum.
Mm. In the early hours of the morning at 1:30 a.m., the US President Donald Trump was demanding through Truth Social that they get asylum. It seems that at that point, that process, Sam, was well and truly underway, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. That was indicated this morning in the press conferences by Australian government officials. You know, it would have been shocking if this process hadn't already been underway when the Iranian women's national team arrived here in Australia, especially given some complexities and questions around the delegation and the visa requirements of some of those staff members. So in some of the reporting, it has been alleged that one of the security officials traveling with the team is a member of the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, the IRCG, who has been labelled a terrorist organisation by the Australian government. It's my understanding that at least one other member who tried to apply for a visa to come to Australia with the team was denied due to their ties with the IRCG and the regime back in Iran. But this particular member of the staff managed to slip through the net, it seems. And over the games that I've attended with the Iran Women's National Team on the Gold Coast, there have been groups of fans, Iranian diaspora fans, who have identified this staff member and have been hurling insults at them in Farsi and in Persian because they know who they are. And so I think there are potentially some more questions that need to be asked about whether enough due diligence was done on the staff members, particularly those who are now sort of being accused of controlling the players and monitoring them and not allowing them to access the appropriate sort of advice or information or safety nets that Australia has been offering them.
Who are the players that have chosen to stay and to seek asylum, and where are they now?
So one of the players we know is the team's captain, Zahra Ghanbari. She was sort of the most high profile of the players in the first week of the Women's Asian Cup. She stepped up to the pre-match press conference, for example, with the head coach, Mazia Jafari, and spoke very, very slightly about the situation happening back in Iran. So her and four of her teammates have been publicly named by a few different outlets now as having sought asylum here in Australia. They have been taken to a safe place, probably a different hotel or a security location in Queensland under the safety and security of the Queensland Police, and potentially also ASIO. So I think it's important and good that we don't know where they are, particularly because there are still probably some concerns that there are regime-aligned Iranians who are here in Australia wanting to track them down. And some of the reporting that's come out this morning has suggested that once the team staff in the hotel, the Iranian regime-aligned team staff, realised that the players were missing, they panicked and they ran around the hotel, up and down the staircases, around the grounds, through the lobby, trying to find them. So it's pretty dramatic, pretty scary. And it's a real mystery as to how the players did it without anybody knowing. But they clearly knew what to do. And it's been acknowledged this morning in some of the answers of Anthony Albanese and Tony Burke that once the players left the hotel, they knew exactly who to go to in order to find safety. So there were some conversations that had apparently secretly been happening with the players behind the scenes over at least the last 48 hours, such that they knew exactly what to do once they made the decision for themselves. But it was still an extraordinary act of bravery, given the threats that have been made against them, given the high media attention that's on them as well, and the incredible international pressure coming from all different sides, sort of focusing and triangulating on these young women who just came to Australia to play soccer. And now they have become a symbol of resistance for a lot of people. So I think it's miraculous that they've managed to escape.
We'll be right back. And Sam, what about the other 20 or so players? Do we know when or if they're expected to return to Iran? And you suggested earlier that some may indeed still want to make that asylum claim.
We don't know when they're going to return. That's been the sort of anxious question that a lot of people on the ground and a lot of sources of mine have had. There have been sort of almost like informal watch parties created by some of the supporters in and around the hotel to keep an eye on the team just in case they shuffle off onto the bus and make a break to the airport. So there's really no knowing when or where they might depart Australia, whether they go to Brisbane Airport, whether they go to the Gold Coast Airport and try to sort of find an interconnecting flight somewhere. But now they very clearly can't move without everybody knowing about it. So that's probably a great thing for the remaining players. But the real dilemma, as has been the dilemma really since these conversations started to become serious over the last week or so, is that in terms of Australia's asylum seeker processes, it's the players themselves who need to reach out to an official and express their desire to seek asylum. So they can't have it done through an intermediary. They can't have it done through a family friend or maybe a diaspora member. They can't have it done through an advocate or an ally or an activist. They have to seek the claim themselves. And that's the biggest trouble, because these players have been so controlled by their staff members. They haven't been allowed to access anybody external in order to express their truest wishes. And that's probably something that they're still experiencing. You know, the players that are remaining in the team at the moment, you know, they do know that their teammates have managed to escape, that they have sought asylum and have been granted visas. And maybe that will inspire more of them to try and come forward, to try and seek help. But some of them may not. And, you know, I think there's space that needs to be held for the complexity of the moment those players are in, because they are desperately seeking information and safety for their families back home. You know, like, what an impossible decision to make when you're a young woman who has come to the other side of the world to represent your nation in a football tournament. And now you have to decide between whether to go back to Iran and potentially save your family, or whether you stay in Australia and you save yourself. It's just so horrific to think that these poor women have been put in this position by people in positions of power back in Iran, and with all this media attention now swirling around them and pressure for them to try and make a decision. You know, my heart goes out to them. I can't imagine how it must feel to be them right now.
And what about the role of sports governing bodies? Refugee advocate and former Socceroo Craig Foster said that too often in sporting environments, the desire of management or the state to coerce and control overrides the welfare of athletes. How would you describe how those bodies have handled this?
A lot of the football bodies who have been involved in the Women's Asian Cup, I think, have largely been quite negligent. The Asian Football Confederation is the major governing body who organises the Asian Cups, men's and women's. And in the process of organising of a tournament, they create what's called a local organising committee. And that's a body that's created, that's popped up in the country of the host of the tournament. And they're staffed and they're sort of on the ground doing all of the planning, the logistics, the organising, the media outreach, accommodation, travel, all those kinds of things. So the local organising committee here in Australia is led by former Matilda Sarah Walsh. And The president of FIFPro Asia, Bo Bush, who is also the CEO of the Players Union here in Australia, told media yesterday that they were not aware about whether the LOC had conducted a human rights risk assessment, which is something that all major tournaments in football need to do ahead of that tournament occurring to assess whether there are situations like the one that Iran find themselves in now, and allows the organising bodies to wrap support around those players and staff members if it's so required. And so before the Women's World Cup in 2023, for example, FIFA conducted a human rights risk assessment, the organising committee here in Australia, because there were a number of nations coming to play here, and there was a potential risk that some of them were fleeing from and therefore would potentially want to be seeking asylum. But there has been no confirmation that the AFC nor the LOC here in Australia conducted a human rights risk assessment before the Women's Asian Cup, which is pretty shocking considering this situation of Iran's women's national team was coming at them from miles away. You know, this was a serious concern months in advance of the tournament actually occurring. What an assessment would have done was identify the kind of risks that were faced by players and create protocols or mechanisms that could have supported those players if certain things were to occur, such as some of the players wanting to seek asylum. So that's been really concerning, that the governing bodies involved on the football side seemingly have not potentially done their due diligence. They haven't done the things that were required of them as governing bodies, particularly in regards to player safeguarding and their own human rights policies as dictated to by FIFA's own statutes. And so that was what Craig Foster was referencing as well, which sadly football governing bodies are known for around the world, from FIFA to the AFC. You know, their human rights policies and guidelines are barely worth the paper they're printed on these days. And largely it's players like these ones at the very, very bottom of the ladder who are the people who suffer the most. They're the ones who are caught in these circumstances that had all of these authorities done their jobs ahead of time and been prepared for circumstances like these, they probably wouldn't be in this situation in the first place. They wouldn't have to be escaping their hotel in, who knows, the middle of the night trying to seek help from the police, because they didn't know who else to turn to. So I think it's really important that this moment is used as an example of the responsibility that football has to take their human rights policies and statutes really seriously. This moment with Iran at the Women's Asian Cup, I think, needs to be a moment of reckoning for football bodies who, if it is true that they were not prepared for this, if the Australian government and the Australian Federal Police hadn't stepped in, these bodies from FIFA to the AFC to the LOC, they all share the same blood on their hands if they had watched these women get back on a plane and return to Iran, knowing the threats that were very real against them.
Sam, we really appreciate your comprehensive insight on this fast-moving story. Thanks so much for your time.
Thanks for having me.
That was freelance women's football journalist Samantha Lewis. You can find more on the Iranian women's soccer team on theguardian.com, and we've linked to the latest updates on this story on the full story page. That's it for today. This episode was produced by Karishma Luthria. Sound design and mixing by Joe Koning. The executive producer of Full Story is Hannah Parks. You can subscribe or follow Full Story wherever you listen to podcasts, and please leave us a review. I'm Noor Haidar. Thanks for listening.